Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Chris Hanna joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
Don't let it bring you down. Excuse me. It's Only Castles Burning, a little Neil Young long distance dedication to Golden State Warriors fans.
Well, all right, since you began there, it reminds me a little bit. Obviously, the Warriors had the advantage that they won, what, four titles? But it does.
It's pretty good.
It reminds me a little bit of the end of the Core Four era in that, like, everyone now, a lot of it, got to blow it up. By all accounts, they want to get under the tax. And so they can do that by letting Chris Paul walk and bringing Clay back on a reduced deal. And like, I'd like to keep watching. I guess if you've got Steph Curry, Draymond Green, you know, the cast that they have, Andrew Wiggins, and then they've got some young players. No, they're not going to win a title next year. It doesn't appear, but don't you just like, just enjoy being good and watching Steph play? I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, can you be good is the question. You know, they're the 10 seed and got blown out. And so, like, in another era, they wouldn't even play postseason basketball. So I think when teams think, you know, it's good to be – I'm a guy who thinks it's good to be good, but that doesn't mean 10th out of 15 teams. I had the same thought about the end of the grit and grind Grizzlies era. You know, one of the different stairs that the Grizzlies had already moved on from Tony Allen and Zach Randolph. So they tried to shift to something different and broke up their core before then. And then once they realized they couldn't really be a competitive playoff team, they just broke the whole thing up. And are the Warriors at the point now where they can't be a competitive playoff team? The other comp I thought about was Dallas with Dirk. You know, they only won the one title, but after that, they could have moved Dirk, but they just kept Dirk till the end because he's Dirk. Well, Dirk's one guy. And so I could see Steph Curry in the Dirk role if he's just here until the Wilson, you know, whatever happens around him, he's just here until he's ready to stop playing. But are you going to do that with three guys? I wonder about it. It's a tricky situation. I think both losses last night were particularly interesting. And the Warriors one, like, it's not – I don't see this as an easy transition to something that's going to be really good but still with, like, these guys on it. And so – you could keep them together and just, like, be a mediocre team for two or three more years, and maybe that is the way to go because those guys mean so much. But, you know, I wonder about the Draymond and Clay of it. I think with Curry, Curry's not going anywhere unless he asks to go somewhere.
Right. Well, I mean, very clearly, if Clay wants some big deal, he's not going to get a big deal. And last night was particularly ugly with an offer for Clay. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, since he's moved into reserve role, he shot 42% from three, 19.8 points, you know, game off the bench. He actually has been pretty good. He's not the defensive player he was before. And if you want to make the argument that I heard being made this morning earlier, it was that if you took away the Draymond Green absence, now, mind you, there may be more of those to come, they were 19-10 after the All-Star break. They were really good down the stretch. They just happened to be in a fierce West. The Draymond's absence it really is the reason they were in the play-in. Last year they lost their first game to Sacramento, and then they came back and won a series. It just happens to be that because of Draymond's histrionics, they were in a worse position. And they do have some young players. Unlike, honestly, those Grizzlies teams, they've got some promising, not tentpole, but promising young players.
Well, that's the last thing you said is the key there. I think, and the other guys, the golden trio there are going to be a year older.
Right, that's true.
So I think the downward trajectory of those guys is steeper than the upward trajectory of the young players, because the young players aren't the same level of player.
Yep.
And so, can they roll it back and be another team that might fight for the fifth spot? Sure, go for it. I'm all for that, actually. String it out as long as possible, well, I say.
Plus, you've got Steve Kerr under contract for another, they extend him for another 2 years. Like, it just feels like that's what they're going to do until the wheels fall off. And they will not compete for a title. The other game, did you say both losses were particularly revealing, you thought?
I thought pretty interesting losses last night. Obviously, the New Orleans gets to play again, sort of. But I thought there was real stuff. From the end of that, the fourth quarter of that game was really interesting for New Orleans in multiple ways, I thought.
Well, no Brandon Ingram, which is almost, no Valanciunas he was played off the floor.
No C.J. McCollum until Zion got injured. When that team found itself down 11 at home halfway through the fourth quarter of a postseason game, the lineup they put out there was Zion Williamson with a true point guard, Jose Alvarado, who's a backup, a more dirty work, mobile role player big, and Larry Nance, who's a bench player.
Yep.
And then two, 3-and-D role player wings, Herb Jones, who's a starter, and Trey Murphy, who's a bench player. And they had Jonas Valanciunas, C.J. McCollum, Brandon Ingram all sitting on the bench, and they came back and tied the game. And I don't think that five is the exact five they should roll out next season. But there are lessons from that team construction that confirm not only my priors about the Pelicans, but lots of other people's priors about the Pelicans.
They may also actually inform the Grizzlies as well. Like we talk about the center thing, whatever. There's Valanciunas sitting on the bench. It's a matchup.
Yeah. Well, I just think that Pelicans team to me has always been less than the sum of its parts. It's like a fantasy team. I never thought that McCollum, Ingram, Zion, Jonas, those four players clicked together in a way that was going to win in playoff basketball, and they went away from it. And then they almost won the game. And the other thing, and it's sad, but it's also sort of like a force. The exact precise moment that his NBA career to this point was peaking.
Right.
Zion Williamson got injured. I mean, that was something.
And it was a sort of a strange injury because he stomped off, he didn't limp off. It was a little bizarre, honestly, the way that it unfolded. But yeah, and I don't know, tragic. There's real tragedy out there, but it certainly was a hell of a moment. And so now you've got the Lakers, against Denver. And you expect to go the way they went last year, some version of how it went last year. But then you've got what could be a severely diminished Pelicans team playing Sacramento.
Yeah, no, I don't like the Kings, but I kind of like them in that game. I think the real winner last night was the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Right.
Because they're going to get either the Pelicans with, a questionable Zion injury situation, or they're going to get Sacramento, which is down two of its, top seven players or whatever, and Kevin Herter and Malik Monk. And I think the Thunder are golden in terms of advancing to the playoffs right now.
It's when you say you don't like the Kings, it's not that you don't like them emotionally. It's that you're not persuaded by how good they are.
Yeah, no, I don't think that team's particularly good. So we'll see.
You did write a piece, A Fan's Guide to Playoffs, which I want to get into. Before I do that, by the way, we didn't discuss yesterday Team USA, basically being named by Woj, official spokesman of the NBA. Jaren not on it, obviously. Jaren not on it, and of course Ja and Desmond Bane not on it either. Not any particular surprise. You didn't think there was... I mean, who would you have bumped?
I felt like they overcorrected a little bit towards, like, name-brand stars.
Yep.
Like, I would have rather had Mikal Bridges on that team than Kawhi Leonard, who they added. Mikal Bridges was really good, I thought, in FIBA last summer, and versatile, and it's okay if he doesn't play,
right.
You know, in the context of those other guys. I thought they needed to bring some heavyweights in, which they did, but it's almost like they decided we need that for every spot, you know. We need name brand guys for every spot, and I think, you know, I'm not saying go get Austin Reeves.
Right.
I'm saying get like a better version, like make Mikal Bridges your kiss man, not Austin Reeves, so that kind of thing.
Yeah, it was just,
you know, I think Desmond Bane actually would have been great on that team.
It's just Anthony Edwards and Tyrese Halliburton from that team this past summer. That was it. That's the only ones who made it. All right, over to the your fan guide to the playoffs. You did express there's reasons to pull against the Thunder and the Pelicans in terms of pettiness, but
yep.
Stronger reasons to pull against the Warriors, who we no longer have to, or the Lakers.
I don't know, stronger, but different.
Different.
You know, it's different pettiness impulses, and so I don't know whether it's stronger or weaker. I don't think I clarified that.
Yeah, right.
But I just said, like, you know, if you're a Grizzlies fan who has some level of dignity, you can't be out of order for the Warriors or the Lakers.
I don't think there's any, and you asked the question, whether there's any lingering resentment against the Clippers. I don't
have any.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Okay.
I don't care.
So the emotional favorite is very clearly Mike Conley and Slo-Mo. Up there in Minnesota. But, sadly, you think they're going to lose in the first round.
I do. I mean, we'll see about that. My upset picks seem to be pretty common, so I think a lot of people are looking at the same thing. I think if you look at one of the things I did last year ahead of the Grizzlies-Lakers series, the Grizzlies were the 2, the Lakers were the 7. But I looked at the net ratings, the performance of those teams in the season only when players were on the floor who were actually going to play in the playoffs.
Oh, right.
So you take out the Brandon Clark and Steven Adams minutes, and then for the Lakers, like, you know, you're really accounting for post-trade deadline, and so you're taking out stuff of guys who got traded away or whatever. And when you did that, like, it looked like an even match. It didn't look like a 2-7, it looked like a 4-5, and maybe the Lakers even before, you know? And so it was not surprising once you did that. I think I haven't done the work, but I think if you do a similar exercise right now across these series, you know, you're going to see Dallas popping as a team better than their seeding. You're going to see Philadelphia in a big way popping as a team better than their seeding. And I think, like, the Phoenix, Minnesota is coin flip territory too. If they're going to have Durant and Booker and Beal all playing.
Yeah. So your 2 upsets. And they're minor. I don't know how big upsets they are.
Well, I think all 3 of those teams to win in the first round.
Yeah, Mavs over the Clips,
yeah.
And Suns over the Wolves.
Yeah.
And now you have before been skeptical of the Mavs. Obviously, trade deadline bolstered them, and then their play down the stretch. What do you make of the Mavs now? Because you've got the Mavs to beat the Thunder. Yeah.
I also have skepticism over the Clippers. I don't think. There's, you know, Kawhi is a little banged up. There's a little bit of question about how good he's going to be. I think that team has sort of muddled towards the end. I think Harden has sort of taken a dip. So I don't think the Clippers are as strong as they were a couple months ago, and that's part of it. I think the Mavericks look better. I think their trade deadline stuff has helped them. I think Kyrie is, like, in a good groove right now. We'll see, you know, you never know what's around the corner with him, but, like, right now he's playing really well. And Luka's played out of his mind. So I think that Dallas team right now is a little bit better than the Clippers.
And ultimately better than the Thunder.
Yeah, I just don't. Thunder may well prove me wrong, but I need to see it. Like, I don't need to see it. I know they're good.
Right.
But to get to a conference finals for a team that hasn't done anything yet and a team that young, I think they're vulnerable. I think the first round, they're solid now because they're going to play the Pelicans or the Kings. If they were playing the Lakers in the first round, I think a lot of people would pick the Lakers and not, you know, for no reason.
All right, so you've got the Mavs beating the Thunder, And then ultimately the Nuggets beating the Mavs to advance to the NBA Finals. A couple other things, though, from the West that I wanted to get to really quick. One is Grizzlies, who were scattered around. Bismack Biyombo ended up in OKC. We've got David Roddy and Grayson Allen in Phoenix and Jonas in New Orleans sitting on the bench. One of those who's interesting is Grayson Allen. Just got a brand new deal for basically, what, $17-18 million a year. What do you make of what he's become?
He's become a really consistent three-point shooter. I think he is not the best, one of the best three-point percentages in the NBA this season. That's also a team that, like, they can't replace him, you know, if they don't lock him up. But he's become a starter, a quality starter scoring guard in the league. You know, not someone who's ever going to sniff an all-star game, but certainly a good role player starter as a four spacer around better players. I still think I may have reputation so strong because no one cares, but it probably seemed like I was very anti Grayson Allen when he was here. I used to like him as well as Desmond Bane or D'Anthony Melton.
Right.
And I still don't. I still rank him third among those three players. But that doesn't mean he's not good.
The other prism through which you looked at this, the playoffs, was how any of this could end up shaking out for the Grizzlies and players who might possibly end up on the Grizzlies. I think Kevon Looney is a guy who Golden State will walk away from in their desire to get under the tax. But the one who's really interesting is someone you've identified for a long time because of Minnesota's looming financial problems, Naz Reid.
Yeah, I mean, the issue there is that he is under contract, so it would have to be a trade. And his salary is such that it does not fit into the Grizzlies' Steven Adams trade exception. So there's only so much the Grizzlies could do to give Minnesota financial relief in a trade. You know, you could a little bit around the margins, but I think if they decide we're trading Naz Reid and their goal is to cut money, they could find a better deal for Naz Reid. Now, if they decide we're trading Naz Reid and we want to add shooting and we want to do other, just tweak our basketball formula, now you're talking like you could, like, let's have a, like, you know, Naz Reid, Luke Kennard discussion and that kind of thing. And so I think there are paths where that could be interesting, but it's not the most obvious one.
All right. Turning to the East, if we're being petty.
There's not as much pettiness going in. You know, it's the East. It's out there, over there.
Right. You're willing to still hold a grudge against Cleveland for the Rock and Roll Museum?
Yeah, I have mixed feelings on that. My pettiness impulse is strong in terms of them having the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But I'm a fan of J.B. Bickerstaff, and I would like to see the way they constructed their team work. I think it's probably not going to work, but I'd kind of like to see it work.
Okay, so in terms of who you like the 76ers, obviously, to win and then to play the Knicks and then to beat the Knicks and then to beat the Bucks. And the Bucks, meanwhile, will have beaten the Pacers without Giannis, maybe, or without Giannis for part of that series. Let's start with that one. Bucks, Pacers, Giannis. That game's not till Sunday. They've already said he won't play.
Yeah, I mean, the Pacers could very well upset the Bucks if Giannis misses a big chunk of that series, or all of it, certainly. But the Pacers, I mean, that Pacers team is a pretty low wattage playoff team right now. And so, you know, they still got Damian Lillard, they still got Chris Middleton, they still got Brook Lopez, they still got some muscle memory of a team that's won a title a couple years ago. I'm not assuming Giannis misses the whole series. And so I have a hard time picking the Pacers to beat the Bucks, even though I think the Bucks are very vulnerable.
But you like the Sixers over the Knicks and then the Sixers over the Bucks. You are persuaded by this Sixers team.
If this were like the NCAA tournament and we had a committee and we were just picking the best teams and seeing them based on who's the best team as you enter the playoffs,
right?
I think Philadelphia would be the second seed in the East. I think if you just judge the teams by the teams they're going to put on the floor starting this week, I think Philly would be the second-ranked team in the East.
All right, so you've got Sixers against the Celtics having beat Cleveland, who beat Orlando in your scenario. Sixers versus Celtics. Celtics advance to the title, to the finals to play Denver. And who wins, Chris?
I'm going to go with the Celtics. I'm not super confident about that. I just think there's reasons to doubt Boston just because of the way the team was constructed. But you got to acknowledge what's happening here. They are running away with the league. They have the number one offense, the number two defense. They won the East by 14 games. They get the best record in the league. They have all the markers of a title team.
And then if you look at the East, it is much more interesting in terms of what might happen, which of these teams might blow up, and how that might shake out for the Grizzlies. Who would be high on the list there?
I mean, I've talked about Wendell Carter too much at this point for something that probably won't happen, because most things probably won't happen.
Right.
But that's an obvious guy. Orlando, if they decide we got to have less front court, more back court, more shooting, less whatever, I think he could be in play. Isaiah Hartenstein, who's been the starting center for the Knicks for a lot of the year because of Mitchell Robinson's injury. Mitchell Robinson's back. He's going to be a free agent. He's actually a player that Jaren Jackson Jr. talked about on the Chris Vernon show this week. So that's someone of interest. I almost think the way Zach Kleiman was talking, even if they could trade for someone as good as Cleveland's Jared Allen, I don't know if they would. I don't know if they want, because that's someone who's not situational. That was someone you'd lock in and think, this is what we're doing. But in terms of quality of player and quality of contract, if the Cleveland breaks up, I think you've got to take a look at him if he becomes available. And there's probably some others I'm forgetting.
I think you mentioned Bobby Portis of the Bucks.
Oh, yeah. No, Bobby Portis is a good one, because Bobby Portis, unlike Naz Reid, does fit into the Adams trade exception. If things really go south in Milwaukee and they decide, let's break this up and let's get under the tax or lower our tax and just reroute the team, the Grizzlies could snap up Bobby Portis and not send any money back. And so I would definitely keep an eye on that one.
And then finally, there's a new NBA mockout. Jonathan Givony over at ESPN has a new NBA mockout. In this one, he has mock draft. He has this is all based on the draft order as it currently stands, and it will not be that draft order, of course, because the lottery has yet to happen. But Portland gets Klingon at 3. Grizzlies end up picking Reed Shepard at 7. Stephon Castle goes 8. Edie goes 15. I know you haven't dug into this, and hell, Reed Shepard hasn't said he's not going back to Kentucky, although it seems dubious.
Right.
But how would you feel about a little shooting guard who can – he's feisty defensively. He can be a backup point guard, but he's small. It is interesting because Stephon Castle is not a shooter, but my God, he is talented. And he could take the minutes behind Ja as he develops his full game.
Yeah, it's interesting. Castle and Reed are different kind of players, and yet similar kind of players at the same time. Like, positionally, they're similar. They're both sort of combo guards, so have some versatility. They both measure out well defensively in terms of, like, production. But it's easy to see Castle's defense translate to the NBA. There's reason to wonder about Reed Shepard's defense translating to the NBA because the athleticism differences. There's a question about how much either can really play on the ball as sort of a nominal point guard at times. But I would say, at the moment, I have a lot of interest in both of those players for the Grizzlies. I think even though the Grizzlies have their backcourt locked up for like the next 4 years, I think, with Moran and Bane, you know, there's a lot of minutes to go around. It's 96 minutes just in the backcourt. And I think, I don't know how long Marcus Smart, even if the Grizzlies are in love with Marcus Smart and he's back next season, I don't think he's here 3 years from now.
Right.
So I think those are players who could step into that Smart role. You know, give them a year of understudy or whatever, then you step into a pretty major role. And so I would take both of those players very seriously as potential Grizzlies targets.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.